The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
And welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We've got a lot to get to on today's program. Coming up in the second segment, we'll be talking about the perils of screen addiction. Quite a lot in the news about that in recent months, and even some pretty stunning comments coming from the creators of these many social media platforms. The creators, the billionaires, responsible for creating sites like Facebook or Instagram or some of these other popular sites. They're coming forward and talking about just how addictive these sites are meant to be and how much, in the case of one clip we'll play for you later, how much they're really destroying the social fabric of society. Pretty amazing. There was another story just yesterday where, again, some big-time investors in Apple came out and said that the company needed to do more to help young people who are addicted to their smartphones, addicted to iPhones. Well, we've talked a fair bit about this over the years at thetrumpet.com, and there's quite a few articles, again, coming up later on in the show that we'll refer you to so that you can help to protect yourself and help your family as well. In just a moment here, too, we'll be following up on some of what we said yesterday about Germany and how that there's more and more articles showing that Germany's about to take the gloves off, so to speak, or no more Mr. Nice Guy. That's the way so many people are putting it, just to kind of summarize the sentiment. Germany's been nice. Germany's been, you know, morally upright since the end of World War II. It hasn't been aggressive. It hasn't been militaristic. But now that's going to change. It has to, because of what's happening in the world today. I'll get to that here in just a moment. But first, I'd like to just go through some of what Melanie Phillips had to say yesterday following the Golden Globes Award show Sunday night. I did everything I could yesterday to try to ignore this story and some of the hoopla surrounding it, all of the actors and actresses wearing black outfits to show their solidarity with all the victims of sexual harassment, all these scandals, the Me Too movement. So here are all these millionaires dressed in their black attire to show how united they are in support of these many victims. And as Melanie Phillips brings out in her piece, really this was nothing more than a vanity parade, as they were there to congratulate themselves, to pat themselves on the back. Phillips says, "It's hard to recall a more egregious display of vanity signaling than the black dress protest." She goes on and says how that there was a mini crisis in the lead up to this awards show because everyone needed a black outfit and they all had to find an outfit. I mean, they're Hollywood celebrities, they're millionaires. And so they had to find a unique black outfit, which is hard when everyone's dressing in black. So there was a shortage of the materials, of designers, of these outfits worth tens of thousands of dollars. Shortly before the awards, there was a crisis, Phillips says. Forget Iran, Syria, North Korea. She talks about the crisis in clothing. Oprah Winfrey's hairstylist said the pressure was incredibly stressful. That's the hairstylist in the lead up to this show. It didn't stop, though, at mere attire. Many female actors brought a female activist as a date and chose to be photographed arm in arm with other women. This was solidarity, not just against men outed as sex pests, but against all men. That's really what, I mean, if you heard anything about Oprah Winfrey's speech, her 9-minute speech Sunday night, it was basically a speech to bash men in general. And again, for some strange reason, she tried to tie in the Jim Crow era racism together with all of these reports, and so many of them coming right out of Hollywood. Here was an opportunity for her, if she really wanted to do something courageous, to get up and to tell Hollywood that it needed to change from inside out. The behavior, for one, the content that industry is churning out year in and year out, glorifying the worst kind of debauchery. Instead, she said all of the favored items, I suppose, on the radical leftist agenda, and got a lot of cheering and clapping, and then incredibly, all of these outlets calling on her to run for president. She's now evidently potentially the next president of the United States because of this speech. Melanie Phillips says, the hypocrisy is epic. Many actors expressing such outrage use sexual chemistry to attract the predatory male movie executives they then profess to despise. Okay, let's look at the industry. If you want a fresh start, if you want to change things, let's look at this industry through and through. This industry that's been celebrating the new morality for well over a half century. Just putting it out there on display. Melanie Phillips says they habitually wear outfits that leave little to the imagination, split upwards or downwards or utterly transparent. What's more, many of the movies and TV series in which they appear, some of them having forgotten to put on any clothes at all, have long crossed the line into soft porn. I mean, and that's putting it mildly. When you think about the movies that are up for the most prestigious awards today, the content, the storylines, among all the exaggerated outrage, however, there have been victims of real horrific sexual violence, yet many of those blustering in black at the Globes knew about this behavior, but kept quiet about it in order to not jeopardize their careers. That's another story. Another angle to this story. This story that's just, in so many ways, it's disgusting to even look into. That's why, as I say yesterday, I didn't even want to get into Oprah Winfrey's speech. Now she's a presidential frontrunner because of this so-called bold and courageous presentation from Sunday night. It says a lot, and again, this will tie in with what we discuss in the second segment. It says a lot, though, about our culture that worships celebrities, that's addicted to social media, popularity. Melanie Phillips says, when Roman Polanski won the Oscar for Best Director in 2003, now I remember clips from this. This was 15 years ago. Roman Polanski, he won the Oscar just 15 years ago. He wasn't present at the ceremony. He had fled to France after being charged in 1977 with rape, sodomy, and other offenses against a 13-year-old girl, and had pleaded guilty to engaging in unlawful sexual intercourse with a minor. I mean, he pled guilty to this. Here's your sexual abuse. Here's the predatory behavior. This was at Hollywood. This was at an award show. This was the Academy Awards. Just 15 years ago, and what happened when he was announced as the winner? He won the Oscar for Best Director. and everyone in the audience, all of the millionaires, in this case not dressed in black, but all of them stood up and cheered for Roman Polanski, celebrating this man's creative genius. He couldn't make it because he was in France. He'd be arrested if he came back to the U.S. Charged in 1977 with rape, sodomy, and other offenses against a 13-year-old girl. Well, today they're singing a different tune. Now the problem evidently is corrected. That's the way it sounds, just judging by what they say. But oh, the hypocrisy. And what an egregious display of vanity. And what a double standard, too, as Phillips brings out in her conclusion. She says Hollywood's finest don't don black outfits to protest against men in developing countries who not only abuse but slaughter women, men and children. Millions of women around the world really do suffer in cultures where male violence towards women is a given. But on those victims, these Hollywood hypocrites are silent. In cultures they choose to present as victims of Western colonialism, they simply ignore the all-too-real oppression of women. They profess solidarity with oppressed women, but of course, it's really all about themselves. That's all that it was about the other night. It was just all about themselves, advertising their hypocrisy. Well, as I say, there's only so much of it you can even stomach. God, and it's not just Hollywood, of course, that's the problem here. God says the sins of our people, that's what's bringing us down. That's what's opening us up for an attack from without. The sins from within. And they run deep in our society. The sickness, as I said yesterday, the sickness is there from head to toe. Through and through, God says. Sick in the head, and it runs all the way through the body. Yesterday as well, I talked about some of these stories about Germany, that Spiegel quote in particular, where some are calling for a new global order, which means that Germany's going to have to depart from its traditional role as good Germany. Now, what does that mean? That's in Spiegel yesterday, or at least I quoted from it yesterday. And of course, this implies that Germany's been this perfect moral leader, morally upright leader in the world over the last several decades. But that's not even really true either, is it? Look at what we've written in The Rising Beast and how Germany was responsible for the breakup of Yugoslavia back in the 1990s. Germany stood up to the whole world and then was able to reel in the United States, led by President Clinton, to take care of all the dirty work with Slobodan Milosevic and Serbia and the breakup of the Yugoslav states. In his book, Flashpoints, George Friedman, he says the rest of Europe harbors suspicions that Germany's public fears and modesty are feigned. So there's some in Europe that don't trust Germany. Think of the Greek financial crisis and the response in Greece to what Germany was doing. We've written about this at the website. Here's Friedman in his book. Here's Friedman, the creator of Straffer, and now a geopolitical, I forget the name of his website. In any event, here he is writing in his book. There's neighbors in Germany. There's neighbors, sorry, next to Germany that believe the modesty and the public fears in Germany, that they're feigned, that in the end, the old Germany has never died, but has merely been asleep. Well, in fact, that's how the Bible describes it. In Revelation 17, you can read how that this system, this Holy Roman Empire, it goes underground. It's still there. It's just underneath the surface. And then it emerges. In this case, one last time, the seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. Friedman says there is no country in Europe that doesn't have bad memories of Germany. Even the Germans have bad memories of themselves. Now, that's just recent history. So even those calling for Germany to take off the gloves, to forget about being Mr. Nice Guy anymore, let's just look at the history for one and get an accurate reading. And then two, if that's the case, what does this mean? If this is the tone in Germany now, we've got to forget about being nice and be mean where we need to be. This is from GermanForeignPolicy.com. It's the Google translation of a German posting, or a posting in German, referring again to the foreign minister in Germany. We quoted from him yesterday, Sigmar Gabriel. It says, urges increased PR measures to prepare the population for a more aggressive German world politics. It talks about how that they're working to get this into the schools and universities to prepare the German population for a more aggressive foreign policy. The background of this, it says, is the German ambition to assume an independent position in world politics and thereby compete more strongly with the USA. The course of the Trump administration, which in part clashes sharply with German interests, is increasingly seen as a turning point in Berlin. In Washington, the EU is becoming increasingly perceived as a competitor and sometimes even as an opponent. That's the way the German foreign minister sees it. You know, President Trump is to blame. The United States now sees Germany as an opponent, as a competitor. And so it goes without saying, we've got to be much more aggressive. In the future, one would not have to rely on values more often, but on strength. That's Germany talking about relying on, not values, strength. Now you think about recent history. A German foreign minister calling on Germany to be tougher, more aggressive, to rely on strength rather than its traditional values, very recent traditional values. And even there, you look behind the scenes, you look beneath the surface, like with the Balkans in the 1990s, the Greek financial crisis in the early 2000s. Friedman says here, the question of Europe now is again the question of Germany and what it wants, what it fears, what it will and won't do. This is the old question of Europe. It goes along with the oldest question in Europe. When will the next war start and where will it be fought? This is just a given, Friedman says. This has been the history in the continent. When will the next war start and where will it be fought? Who will be the instigator? It says for 45 years, Germany was divided and there was peace. Now Germany is united again and is unquestionably the leading power of Europe. Of course, we had so much to say. The reunification of Germany, the collapse of the Soviet Union, the acceleration of Bible prophecy, a period of no more delay, as it says in Revelation 10. Friedman says the idea that Europe has moved beyond using armed conflict to settle its issues is a fantasy. It's a fantasy to think this. Look at history. Look at what we've already seen after the collapse of the Soviet Union. Look at the Russian bear and what it's doing to try to reclaim some of its lost territory. It knows its history. Vladimir Putin is trying to rebuild the empire. What happens when that beast fully emerges out of the heart of Europe? Well, the Bible's very clear and specific on this oncoming European power. The beast that was and is not, as it says in Revelation 17. It disappears from the scene just for a time, just for a short while. But not for God's work, God's church, God's spokesman. You wouldn't know. You'd just think, oh, well, Europe, there's never ever going to be another war in Europe. We're too modern for that. We've come too far for that to ever happen again. Well, as Friedman said, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. It just goes underground for a short time. And really, if you look at what happened in the Balkans in the 1990s, I mean, that, as my father brings out in the Prophesy Again booklet, that was really the beginning. The beginning of this beast power's reemergence out into the open. Let me just play you a couple of clips. This goes back to 2005, my father's Key of David program, The Beast That Was and Is Not and Yet Is. Here's clip 6.
Now, let me just read one short paragraph of what Herbert W. Armstrong wrote on May 9, 1945. Here's what he said. We don't understand German thoroughness. From the very start of World War II, they have considered the possibility of losing the second round, as they did the first. And they have carefully, methodically planned in such eventuality the third round, World War III. Hitler has lost. The round of war in Europe is over, and the Nazis have now gone underground, or into the bottomless pit, as Revelation would call it, although if you look up the Greek word, it means underground.
That's my father from 2005. It went underground, and they've carefully and methodically planned for the next round of fighting. And so when a German foreign minister comes forward and says, look, we've got to start re-educating our youth, we've got to start preparing for a tougher, more aggressive stance in world politics, we've got to stop being so nice, that should make some people sit up and take note, particularly people who know about this prophecy, who know about what Herbert Armstrong was proclaiming for decades. That's what my father's quoting there from that program. He read to you what Mr. Armstrong had to say back in 1945. And he continues quoting from Mr. Armstrong, even in this next clip here. Here's clip number 7.
Mr. Armstrong concluded here, in France and Norway, they learned how effectively an organized underground can hamper occupation and control of a country. Paris was liberated by the French underground and Allied armies. Now a Nazi underground is methodically planned. They plan to come back and to win on the third try. Well, now, would you say he was right? Well, I'd say he certainly was right about that. But many books have been written on that. The fascists and the Nazis went underground, but the Bible says they're going to rise again. The same system that we saw in World War II will rise again in Europe and control most of Europe. That's what your Bible says, and I'll tell you, it's already almost risen. And we need to understand it because this sixth beast tells us the kind of beast that we're going to see come up from that pit or that underground. The beast comes out of the underground and then it goes into perdition. So that's the good news.
There is good news at the end of this. Again, this is the seventh and final resurrection. But we're seeing it. That was from 2005, my father's program. We're seeing this power emerge from underground. And as my father brought out in the Prophesy Again booklet, it started in the Balkans in the 1990s. And now we're seeing more and more of this power emerging. Pretty soon the whole world's going to be seeing it and will be shocked. They're going to be shocked, as Mr. Armstrong said. at what has happened and how fast it all came together. For more on this, as I said, I've mentioned these two booklets, The Rising Beast, that really goes through all of the details involving the Balkans there from the 1990s. That would be an important study or review. And then also Prophesy Again, and with respect to the latest here on what's coming out from Germany, I believe Richard Palmer is planning to also go through some of this same material in today's Trumpet Brief. So you can look for that in your email box. If you aren't a subscriber to the Trumpet Brief, you can become a subscriber. We have more than 20,000 people now subscribing to this daily email blast sent from thetrumpet.com. And you can receive that to your inbox every single day, every evening, and subscribe to it at our website, thetrumpet.com. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can also do that by sending in comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Herbert W. Armstrong described Germany's devastating destruction in 1944 and 1945 as one of the worst beatings ever administered to any nation. Western leaders from both sides of the Atlantic assured our peoples that a demoralized Germany would never again be able to disturb the peace of the world. But while Washington and London were promising that German militarism would never again be able to strike, Herbert Armstrong was warning the world of one final resurrection of a German-led Holy Roman Empire. Only a very few listened. Mr. Armstrong said German industry and the German people's willpower and determination to work, produce, and organize was the very heart and lifeblood of all Europe.
The nations of Europe want to unite. They just don't know how to do it.
He said the prostrate body of Europe could not come back without the leadership of a revived and vigorous Germany.
And the economic and the military body that is to rise up and to restore the Roman Empire, the thing that we least suspect here in the United States, it cannot rise up without its heart. And its heart is in Germany.
The world is witnessing history repeat itself one more time. Request Germany and the Holy Roman Empire for more on this important subject. Don't forget to visit our website at thetrumpet.com. Every day, thetrumpet.com will help you understand your world by analyzing today's headlines under the clear light of Bible prophecy. Log on to thetrumpet.com and sign up for our daily Trumpet Brief email and subscribe to The Trumpet magazine. The Trumpet Daily.
At the end of yesterday's show, we talked about our society's widespread acceptance of the so-called recreational drugs like marijuana, and how that we're celebrating this as something that's fun and good for society, when in fact it's a grave danger, and it's destroying the minds of our young people in particular. And I think God's really impressed that on my mind here these last couple of days, because I've seen a couple of these stories and some things that I've been bringing out in my college classes that show just how fierce Satan's attack is. He's going after our minds. He wants to grab hold of our minds and the minds of our children. And yet look at how these evils are just being embraced and celebrated as if they're completely normal, as if there are no harmful side effects. One individual, one of our listeners, he emailed me last night following yesterday's show, and he said, as a person suffering to this day from my since repented of marijuana use, I want to thank you for your warning about the dangers of marijuana, and for giving the practical solution for overcoming substance abuse and all other problems. He says, I hope that your warning might help to save some minds. I mean, here's someone who's repentant. Here's someone who's overcome this addiction from long ago. And yet, as he says, as he admits, he's still suffering from the effects of this use, this addiction. These many years on from his addiction, he's still suffering to this day. There is a cause and effect. And what we do day after day after day to our minds, or what we don't do, it takes a toll with respect to screen addiction. This story yesterday that broke, as it was covered in the Times today in London. Here are these big-time Apple iPhone investors, and they're coming forward. They're coming forward encouraging Apple to do more to help look into or to expose the dangers of iPhone addiction, particularly to children. The article says here, scientific evidence suggests that the frequent use of a smartphone has negative psychological effects on young users and investors. The investors, it says, who own about $2 billion of Apple shares, warned. So they've got a lot at stake here. They've got a lot invested in Apple, $2 billion worth. And even they are saying, look, there's some great harm here that we need to tell people about. Psychologists say that smartphone addiction can reduce empathy and increase the risk of depression and suicide in children and young adults. The average teenager spends about 4.5 hours a day on a smartphone, with half admitting they feel addicted to their devices. Half of our teenagers, they fully admit I'm addicted. And who's doing anything about it? Where are the educators? Where are the politicians? And where, oh, where are the parents? 4.5 hours every single day glued to a phone. Apple's worth $900 billion, this company. And about 2/3 of its money comes from selling iPhones. So we'll see. Do you think Apple's going to step up and do anything about this? The article says here, the warnings about health effects of iPhones on young users were published in an open letter to Apple's board of directors, signed by Ann Sheehan. These are the two big-time investors, and Barry Rosenstein. Ms. Sheehan and Mr. Rosenstein said that they had consulted leading pediatricians and psychologists before reaching their conclusions. They added, it would defy common sense to argue that high levels of iPhone usage by children whose brains are still developing is not having at least some impact, or that the maker of such a powerful product has no role to play in helping parents to ensure it is being used optimally. Help parents to understand the dangers here. And here again, a separate article should be written about a parent's responsibility. A grave responsibility for any parent. 4.5 hours? It just shouldn't be allowed. It's that simple. And then you add to that these other dangers. It says in the same article, it's also no secret that social media sites and applications for which the iPhone and iPad are a primary gateway are usually designed to be as addictive and time-consuming as possible. This is social media. So you've got the gadgets, you've got the phones, you've got the iPad, and then you have the sites that so many of our young people are addicted to. And they're designed to be addictive. And here again, that's coming not just from the Times of London. That's coming from the creator of these addictive sites. The creators, the kingpins in Silicon Valley. As more and more of them are coming forward now and explaining in the clearest possible way. This is an addiction. This is causing harm. Listen to an exchange here. Actually, this is just Sean Parker's comments from early November. He was one of the initial founders of Facebook, I think the first president of Facebook. He co-founded the Napster website. Here's a man that's worth, a young man, relatively speaking, a young man worth billions of dollars helping to create so many of these social media technologies. Here's what he had to say on November the 9th. This is clip one.
When Facebook was getting going, I had these people who would come up to me and they would say, you know, I'm not on social media. And I would say, okay, you know, you will be. And then they would say, no, I value my real life interactions. I value the moment. I value presence and I value intimacy. And I would say, well, you're a conscientious objector. That's okay. You don't have to participate, but you know, we'll get you eventually. and like, I don't know if I really understood the consequences of what I was saying. Because the unintended consequences of a network when it grows to a billion or 2 billion people, and it literally changes your relationship with society, with each other, with it probably interferes with productivity in weird ways. It, God only knows what it's doing to our children's brains. You know, if the thought process that went into building these applications, Facebook being the first of them to really understand it, that thought process was all about how do we consume as much of your time and conscious attention as possible. And that means that we need to sort of give you a little dopamine hit every once in a while because someone liked or commented on a photo or a post or whatever. And that's going to get you to contribute more content, and that's going to get you, you know, more likes and comments. I mean, it's a social validation feedback loop that it's like a, I mean, it's exactly the kind of thing that a hacker like myself would come up with, because you're exploiting a vulnerability in human psychology. And I think that the inventors, creators, you know, and it's me, it's Mark, it's the, you know, Kevin Systrom at Instagram, it's all of these people, understood this consciously, and we did it anyway.
It's a candid admission coming from one of the inventors, the creators. They understood the dangers, and they went and did it anyway. Exploiting the vulnerabilities in human psychology. Here's this, as he says, this social validation feedback loop. And it's designed, it's created to consume as much of your time, as much of your children's time and attention as possible. Now, even if the content itself was good, the time that's wasted, the time that's stolen, the time that's not spent doing other things that young people should be doing. But then you add to it that 4.5 hours on average. Look at so much of the content that our young people, our children, are consuming. They don't have to have these gadgets. They don't have to have these sites to lead a normal life. It's these sites that are contributing to all these abnormalities, to all of this dysfunction, to all of these societal ills. I mean, I've got two teenagers, and they don't have a phone. If they're somewhere where they absolutely need it for safety reasons, so that they can get in touch with their parents, then they can borrow their mother's or something. But it's not a necessity in life. They spend enough time as it is on computers just because of taking online classes. But you see them over and again, everywhere that you go, in the mall, at dance class, or at lessons, this or that. Young people that they come into contact with, here and there, just, they can't pull away from the phone. And listen to the creators and the inventors. They're telling it to us straight up. This is what we thought going in. We knew it. We did it anyway. Not a lot of contrition there. This next creator, he's a little more contrite. But listen to how he describes the impact of this and how it impacted him after the fact. His first name's Chamath. His last name's a little hard to pronounce, but he was an executive at Facebook. Here again, he spent most of his life in Silicon Valley. Very wealthy creator, inventor, designer of these many sites. Here's what he had to say on November 13th. This is clip two.
I feel tremendous guilt. I think we all knew in the back of our minds, even though we feigned this whole line of like, there probably aren't any really bad unintended consequences. I think in the back, deep, deep recesses of our minds, we kind of knew something bad could happen. But I think the way we defined it was not like this. It literally is a point now where I think we have created tools that are ripping apart the social fabric of how society works. That is truly where we are. And I would encourage all of you as the future leaders of the world to really internalize how important this is. If you feed the beast, that beast will destroy you. If you push back on it, we have a chance to control it and rein it in. And it is a point in time where people need to hard break from some of these tools and the things that you rely on. The short-term dopamine-driven feedback loops that we have created are destroying how society works.
Destroying how society works. Ripping apart the social fabric. And then he says pointedly to these young people, they're in the audience, if you feed the beast, that beast will destroy you. It'll destroy you. He went on to say this. This is clip three.
If you feed the beast, that beast will destroy you. If you push back on it, we have a chance to control it and rein it in. And it is a point in time where people need to hard break from some of these tools and the things that you rely on. The short-term dopamine-driven feedback loops that we have created are destroying how society works. No civil discourse, no cooperation, misinformation, mistruth. And it's not an American problem. This is not about Russian ads. This is a global problem. So we are in a really bad state of affairs right now, in my opinion. It is eroding the core foundations of how people behave by and between each other.
That's, again, Chamath, one of the founders, one of the co-inventors, an executive at Facebook, coming out and saying, look, you look at this problem and multiply it by billions, as he says here in this next clip. Here's clip four.
We curate our lives around this perceived sense of perfection because we get rewarded in these short-term signals, hearts, likes, thumbs up, and we conflate that with value and we conflate it with truth. And instead, what it really is fake, brittle popularity that's short-term and that leaves you even more, and admit it, vacant and empty before you did it. Because then it forces you into this vicious cycle where you're like, what's the next thing I need to do now? Because I need it back. Think about that compounded by 2 billion people.
And so you can see why then. Oprah Winfrey gets up, gives a 9-minute speech. It makes the rounds on social media. It gets tweeted, it gets retweeted. And the next thing you know, I mean, she should be the president of the United States. This was a landmark speech that changed society for the better. Well, referring back to this piece at the Times, these investors coming forward saying that Apple needs to do more to help parents, be aware of the dangers of this addiction. Here are two investors. They've got billions of dollars at stake here. And even they, even the creators, have come forward to say how harmful it all is. But how much of an impact is that having? How many people are actually making changes? I mean, that same individual that I just played a clip from, he, in the very next statement here, he talks about how I really don't have any solutions. And then he goes on and gives the solution that he applies in his own life, which actually is the solution. Here's what he had to say, clip 5.
You know, my solution is I just don't use these tools anymore. I haven't for years. It's created huge tension with my friends, huge tensions in my social circles. If you look at, like, you know, my Facebook feed, I've posted maybe 2 times in 7 years. 3 times, 5 times. It's like it's less than 10. And it's weird. I guess I kind of just innately didn't want to get programmed. And so I just tuned it out. But I didn't confront it. And now to see what's happening, it really bums me out.
So in his life, he tunes it out. He turns it off. He doesn't want to get programmed. But he looks at what's happened to the 2 billion. And he gets bummed about it. He's bummed because of the impact it's had. And he mentions a couple of examples of stories, fake news that ran wild on Facebook and led to tragedies, actual real-life tragedies. Just one example of many. Well, as I say, this has been impressed on my mind all the more just because of some of the stories I've discussed in the last couple of days on air here. And also with what we've been talking about in class this morning in Principles of Living, for example. Just talking about the uniqueness of human beings compared to the animals, to the beasts of the field, both made of the dust of the ground, as it says in Genesis 1 and 2, both made or both nephesh, that's the Hebrew word, both living, breathing creatures. And yet in looking at Genesis 1 and verse 26, you see how unique and how special that nephesh that was the first man that God created, how special it was compared to all of the other life forms that God made. A living, breathing creature equipped with a human spirit. That's Job 32 and verse 8, Zechariah 12:1. A spirit in man, 1 Corinthians 2, same thing. This mind power that actually bridges the gap between human beings and God Himself. Well, another component needs to join in on that process or that connection, and that's the Holy Spirit of God. The Holy Spirit joining together with the human spirit, like it says in Romans 8, which then makes us the children or the sons of God. This awesome, incredible human potential for man to be born into the family of God. And so how important is it, as I was saying to the students this morning, how important is it for you as young people to develop your minds, to learn to think and to reason together with God, to be skilled out on the work site, to be accomplished in the schoolroom, to make good grades, to learn how to study and to pray and to communicate with God and to draw closer to our Father in heaven so that we can realize our incredible human potential. Herbert Armstrong wrote in The Missing Dimension in Sex, he said, man is a physical being, but with a spiritual attribute. and of the whole man, the mind, with its spiritual attribute and potential, is the all-important factor. Can you see why Satan is targeting the mind? Can you see why Satan wants our young people to be drugged up on so-called recreational drugs? Or addicted to a little screen? Unable to pull away from social media? Satan wants to destroy their minds. Satan wants to destroy your mind. Man is a physical being, but with a spiritual attribute. And of the whole man, the mind, he says, the mind, with its spiritual attribute and potential, is the all-important factor. That's what it takes to develop godly character. It takes a mind like Jesus Christ's. It takes a mind empowered by the Spirit of God. It takes a mind that's led by the Spirit of God. All through the Bible, you see the instruction about taking advantage of this short time that we have. Paul said, redeem the time because the days are evil. We're living in evil days. The kinds of things that you see at award ceremonies or on television last night here in the UK. Piers Morgan interviewing a transgender. An hour-long sit-down. So that we can figure out what's going on in the mind of someone who's gone through transgender surgery. I mean, that passes for entertainment. It's more than that today. It's sophisticated. It's modern. It's something that we need to understand. It's something that we need to celebrate. You see it on display at award ceremony Sunday night. It's everywhere that you turn. It's CNN reporters smoking marijuana on live television and telling you just how great and how wonderful this way of life is. It's politicians, it's governors of New Mexico that are coming out and saying, listen, if everyone smoked marijuana, what a better world this would be. Marijuana destroys minds. It destroys careers. It destroys education, true education. And you have cases today, people that have repented of that evil, that, as I read to you a moment ago, who are still suffering, who are still struggling with the effects of those dangerous drugs, these dangerous addictions. That's what they are. And God forbid that we should just, as parents, as educators, as adults, God forbid that we should just turn a blind eye to it and let it go on and let the children run the show and let the children do whatever they want with their time all through the day. They need guidance. They need direction. I mean, God says we need it. Give careful thought to your ways. It says in the book of Haggai, we've got roughly 70 years or so to live. That's from the Psalms. Moses said, so teach us. Teach us, God, to number our days. Teach us, teach our children how to take full advantage of each and every day. It's like I read at the end of that Fox News article yesterday. These are the things that we need to be passing along or reinforcing in our homes, with our children, with our families, on how to get high on life, how to get high on a godly lifestyle, living a happy, healthy, joyous life of abundance in submission to God's holy laws. Here are all these smart, educated people, millionaires, billionaires. I mean, they sound so eloquent. It sounds so, you know, I'm bummed out. I feel bad about it. I mean, I think we did kind of know, deep down in our heart of hearts, we did know it. But just so that you know, I'm humble and contrite now. I realize what wrong I've done. Or in the case of all the actors, we'll dress in black, we'll say men are the problem, we'll feel good about ourselves, and then we'll carry on producing the same kind of vile content day in and day out, and nothing will change. I mean, maybe a more pointed attack on the role of a man, but outside of that, nothing will change. Where have there been calls for changing the content that Hollywood produces? Here's where the change occurs. It starts with the mind. It starts with your mind and what you do. Colossians 3, study those first few verses in that chapter about setting our minds on the things above, not on earthly, worldly things, but the things that are above, the things of God. Philippians 4 and verse 8 also comes to mind. Beautiful, beautiful verse over there in Paul's epistle to Philippi. Well, that's about all that we really have time to go through on this program. I mentioned some articles that we have at the website. I just don't have time to run through them all. Maybe I'll get to that tomorrow. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.